Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Badlands Podcast, the only podcast out there that is 100% chiseled and is proudly part of the Chairshot Media Group. I am Mags, and with me for the second time this week, it's like we've only just recorded yesterday, Paul. It's my podcast wife, Mr. Paul Talley. Paul, how are you, sir?
You're so lucky, aren't you?
I know. You're like buses. I don't see you for months on end, and then all of a sudden you like turn up twice a week.
Don't get the reference, but thank you very much.
You don't get the reference of buses.
Oh, buses. I thought you said butters.
What, butters like the character from South Park?
Yeah, yeah. And I thought, I don't watch South Park, so I don't get it, but I'll go along with it. Yeah, I am like a bus. Lockdown will do that to you.
Well, you can't travel on them anymore, so unless it's essential.
This podcast is essential.
It certainly is. Yeah. Definitely. We should all get furloughed because of this podcast.
We should get paid because of this podcast.
Well, maybe one day, sir. Maybe one day. Anyway, let's introduce today's guest. He's one of the hottest podcasters that come out over the last few months. Someone who... got the podcasting bug by being a guest on this very show not too long ago, Mr. Simon Powell. Simon, how are you?
I'm very, very good. Thanks, Max. How are you two doing, all right?
Yeah, not too bad. Excited for this show.
Yeah, good. Thank you for inviting me on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, sorry I missed you last time.
Yeah, no worries. No worries. It's nice to meet you at last.
And you.
So I mentioned there, Simon, that you got bitten by the podcast bug. If there's anybody who kind of hasn't heard of your content, tell us a little bit about it and tell us how it got started and kind of what's the idea behind your podcast.
Yeah, sure. As you mentioned, it kind of I kind of got bitten by the bug by speaking with your good self on Badlands and Why We Watch. Well, quite a while ago now, wasn't it? Really enjoyed it, and a few other people asked me to pop on theirs and talk about old events and so on. And I just love talking wrestling. I just really enjoyed talking wrestling, especially when you're sort of looking back on old shows that are more sort of my era, I guess. It's something that I wrote about. It's stuff I enjoy talking about more so really than what I see, especially from the WWE on television now. So yeah, I mean, after speaking with yourself and my better half sort of saying that she thinks I'd be very good at it as well. Eventually sort of took the plunge. It took a little while to set up and I had a few trial runs and wanted to make sure it was as good as it possibly could be before I started actually putting it out there. I think I kind of sometimes stress out over small things that aren't important, but ultimately that kind of delayed the whole process a little while. But yeah, now I'm on episode 12 came out today. And effectively I try and talk to independent wrestlers. I mean, today, for example, I've got an interview out with Joel Redman, who was one half of the first NXT tag team champions. He's been out and wrestled for All Japan and so on. That's a brilliant story about how he grew up on a farm and built his own ring out of hay barrels and stuff like and so on. And then that's sort of half of the format I do. The other half is looking back on old shows, looking back on careers of old wrestlers. I mean, Mags, you've been on a couple of times yourself. Well, you were the very first guest. I think the only three-time guest so far. So. We discussed the Legion of Doom, didn't we? And we discussed Hell in a Cell matches, and I've got a show coming up very soon about the Royal Rumble 1992 event, and it's just nice to be talking wrestling with people who like to converse on that subject. I mean, I talk to my wife a great deal about it, but I think a lot of the time she gets bored of my ramblings, and that may be why she sort of pushed me in that direction. But bless her, I'm really glad she did.
So she gets. What my wife gets, the glassy eyes is like, yeah, I'll pretend I'm listening, but yeah, I'm thinking about something else.
Sharon, my wife, she's a wrestling fan herself. Very much into, you know, various different wrestlers, various different matches and events and so on. But when I'm talking to her about War Games 92 and telling her the same story for like the 10th time, then yeah, I think it's better that I speak to new people such as you gentlemen than bore her. So.
Well, I certainly am glad that you took the plunge, and it's been an honour to be on your show. Still waiting for Mr. Tollier to make his SJP wrestling pod appearance. I'm working hard as his agent. He farts against me. He don't really like the fact I'm his agent, but I am trying to get him gigs.
Hey, no worries.
You're always pimping me out.
What I enjoy doing as well is looking at older shows, sometimes through the eyes of someone who hasn't seen them before. So I've got a couple of people who are in the States who haven't really seen a great deal of WCW. I mean, Mags, you mentioned yourself, you haven't seen a great deal of certain WCW events. A young lad called Conrad, who's got his own podcast and so on, and he does one with you as well, doesn't he, Mags, on a Sunday night talk at the table?
We love young Conrad. We love young Conrad on this show.
Yeah, he was on a few weeks ago, wasn't he?
He's been on and looked at WrestleMania 5 and an old Clash of the Champions event with me. So it's great looking at events that I've seen, and obviously I kind of have, I suppose, my opinions and thoughts already made up about them. But seeing it through, you know, sometimes these events are 30 years old, and seeing it through the eyes of someone who's not seen them before, that I find really fascinating. So, and yeah, that's
the
SJP.
We had that with the... Yeah, we had that with the War Games episode. I hadn't seen a lot of the War Games episode, and it was kind of like a lesson in that. But yeah, I think a Vince McMahon retrospective would be perfect for Paul, because he doesn't know what a Vince McMahon is.
I was having a bad day.
Is that so?
So I like the idea of looking at kind of old pay-per-views, like say through the viewpoint of people who haven't seen it as well. We've got one coming up with that 90s wrestling podcast. Looking at WrestleMania 7, and I've seen the main event of WrestleMania 7, but not the rest of it. So I'm looking forward to doing that.
Oh, there's some really good stuff on there. Warrior Savage is great, but there's also some dross on there. So it's quite an up and down show. But yeah, it's quite an eventful pay per view to look at. So yeah, you'll enjoy that.
Excellent.
He's just glad that Boss Man's on it. That's all they were bothered about. That's what sold it. Said.
That's what makes a WrestleMania for me.
Is that right? Yeah.
In fact, that's your topic for a Paul Tolley episode, the laughing times of Boss Man.
Hey, we'll figure that out, shall we? We'll sort that out.
I would love that.
Wow. So let's get into this episode then, guys. So Simon, you've been on the show before, so we know your Mount Rushmore, the greatest wrestler of all time. They've already been calculated and added to the collated list. So what we thought we'd come up with, and because we've recently done a show on your podcast about one of my favourite tag teams, the Legion of Doom, I thought it'd be interesting to get your Mount Rushmore tag teams. Me and Paul will chip in. Just basically, who are you for, and a little bit of reason why each one kind of makes the cut.
Yeah, sure. Okay. I mean, in no real particular order. They're very difficult to sort of divide them up into a top four. But I mean, when you said about my own favourite tag teams, my mind instantly straight away went to two main ones. And the first would obviously be the Road Warriors after our extensive discussion on the SJP wrestling pod. I don't think you can go wrong with the Road Warriors. Great stuff in the WWF, great stuff in Jim Crockett, the NWA. If you catch their stuff out in Japan, the sort of strong style, I suppose, as it's referred to now, that they perhaps coined before it was even strong style, with their sort of very stiff, stiff clotheslines and punches and moves they pulled off. I think the Road Warriors are they're as perfect a tag team, especially for that sort of late 80s, early 90s, as you can possibly get. The Hawk was probably the more charismatic of the two, Animal quite the powerhouse, but yeah, it was a great combination, and I just think that they really stand out as, when you're talking about tag teams, you can't ignore them. I think they really stand out.
Yeah, I am 100% behind you. They're on my list there, but which other teams made the cut for you, sir?
The second team that was very difficult to decide upon, but you know which one sort of came first for me, would be, I suppose, for very similar reasons, would be the Steiner brothers, Rick and Scott. I'm a huge fan of Scott Steiner anyway. I like the whole Big Papa Pump character in his later years, but the Steiner brothers themselves, similar to the Road Warriors, the first time I saw them was in the early 90s WWF run they had, which was very short. They went back down south, for want of a better term, quite soon after that. It's more so as I got older, I started seeing more of the Steiner brothers work in WCW and then in Japan and then with Japanese wrestlers in WCW. For example, I mentioned War Games 92 earlier on. Before the War Games match itself, there's a Steiner brothers tag match there that gets forgotten about sometimes with two imports from New Japan that is hard-hitting and fantastic, a great tag match. The Steiner brothers, for me, for all the reasons I picked the Road Warriors, I think the Steiner brothers tick a lot of those same boxes.
Mm-hmm. And again, another one I've got on mine, and I think the reason I went with the Steiner brothers on my list is how innovative they were as wrestlers. Especially Scott, the amount of moves that he kind of invented was absolutely unreal. Who's your third pick?
This is where I started getting quite tricky. I mean, I initially sent you a message when you said about doing this topic and said, I know the Mount Rushmore is four by definition. Can I have nine? And you point blank said no. So, this is where, after the sliding of the Road Warriors, it starts getting a little bit difficult because I find it difficult to separate a lot of these teams. But one I think that I can't ignore purely because of the influence they've had on modern wrestling as well as being fantastic back in the day. I think you've got to look at Tully Blanchard and Arn Anderson as being one of the greatest tag teams of all time. Even though, I mean, they were effectively done and dusted by, what are we thinking, 89, effectively, weren't they? Because Tully failing a drugs test when Arn was going back down south to WCW or Jim Crockett Promotions, it might have been back then. I can't remember the timeline exactly. But the work they did in the mid-80s, the territory days, their work as part of the Four Horsemen, being involved in the attacks on Luger and Sting and all this sort of stuff. But then the in-ring standard as well was superb. Their run as the Brainbusters with the WWF from, I think it was 88 through to 89, they were there. Again, the timeline I'll have to check. But and the matches they had with the Hart Foundation, the Rockers, and so on. I mean, those teams there, Hart Foundation and Rockers, absolutely fantastic themselves. They kept up their end of the bargain, but Tully and Arn, I think, are absolutely real wrestlers to me. That's real in my head. That's real wrestling, that sort of old school style, and you can see a lot of it now with how they've influenced FTR and so on. So yeah, they're very high up on my list.
Yeah, and they still like I said, they've influenced FTR, but they're still working now in one of the hottest companies in the world in AEW. So yeah, mm-hmm. They're kind of a their influence on the tag team wrestling world just cannot be denied. So it's a great pick. Which of the many tag teams on your list makes that final spot?
Okay. There's a few that sort of, I think, deserve honorable quick mentions. I mean, I'm a huge Shawn Michaels fan, but the first time I saw Shawn was in the Rockers, and it was very, very much towards the end of their run, but the dual super kicks, the dual nip-ups, the punches off the top rope at the same time. I thought these guys were superb. You can see a lot in what they do in the Young Bucks with the way that they do a lot of dual moves and so on. And you know, the Bucks in my household are adored. My youngest daughter thinks they are wonderful. So, and I suppose by proxy, I pick up on a little bit of that adoration myself. The Rock and Roll Express as well, absolutely superb. Again, similar, I suppose, to the Rockers and the Bucks, smaller guys, a lot of aerial moves. But it's the other side of the Rock and Roll Express coin, I suppose, that I go for with my final pick, and that would be the Midnight Express, their long-term rivals. Again, the same as Tully and Arn, fantastic in the ring, fantastic ability. Heat, just off the charts. Absolutely. When you're having to carry weapons to the ring just to be able to get back out, and there's talks of Jim Cornette, yes, okay, he's a little bit crazy, but there's talks of Jim Cornette carrying weapons or even guns in his car because of the heat the Midnight Express drew. And then you see the standard of the wrestling themselves, their matches with the Rock and Roll, their matches with the Samoans, and all sorts from that 80s era. The Midnight Express, to me, make up that top four. But it's incredibly difficult for me to split that four from numerous others.
I mean, I suppose that's the point of a Matt Rushmore, is that one day you can totally change a man, and it's how you kind of wake up to which one will be your favourites and which one won't. But yeah, they are four outstanding tag teams, and I can't have a lot of argument with them. But I've gone a slightly different route for mine. LOD and the Steiners, obviously, we've mentioned. I could wax lyrical about LOD all the live long day. And if you want to hear that, definitely go to the SJP archives and check that out, because that was literally a love letter to the Legion of Doom from me and Simon. The other ones I've gone for, I've gone with the Dudleys. I think that everywhere that they have been world champions. A total of 20 major world titles, 10 with the WWF, 2 with TNA, or 2 with New Japan, and then 8 with ECW. So more than actually 20, but then so many different kind of regional championships. Both have had single success as well, and yeah, they just were so... It was just a sign of the times of how good they were and the kind of like the influence they had. And then my last pick, I went with the Hardys. I think that both Matt and Jeff are some of the most innovative wrestlers that I've ever seen. Again, 9 WWF tag team titles. They've won titles in Ring of Honor, TNA. Both of them have won multiple singles titles. Both still relevant now. Wrestling still 20 plus years on. So yeah, I've gone with LOD, the Dudleys, the Hardys, and the Steiner Brothers.
Good choices. You've covered most of mine. I went slightly different again. I went for kind of the 4 decades of my life to pick one from each decade. So the one you didn't get of mine was the New Day. Cheating a bit, they're not strictly a tag team, they're a trio, but they've been tag team champions for pretty much a decade. Mm-hmm. And at times kept that division in WWE alive. Their feuds with the Usos, that's kind of an on and off feud with them over the years, has been fantastic to watch. And I just find them really entertaining. They're one of my favorite things to watch on WWE, and still are to this day. Then go back into the 2000s. You've already picked them. It's the Hardys. Because they were, for a long time, the most exciting part of the show for me. I love watching them. Obviously, the TLC matches were just phenomenal, and felt like they were just breaking new ground with the Dudleys and Edge and Christian at the time. 90s, again, you've already waxed lyrical about them. Legion of Doom, they can't not be on the Mount Rushmore of best ever tag teams. And I went opposite to Simon from the 80s. I went for the Rock and Roll Express.
Yeah,
just because their influence, you can't argue with their influence throughout the years. You know, you see a lot of, like you said, but mentioned with the Young Bucks draw heavily from them to this day, and the Rock and Roll Express themselves are still drawing cards. Well, into, I don't even know what age they are, but it's still
sixties or now, isn't it? It must be.
Yeah, yeah, it's still immensely popular on any show they appear on. So they might.
Could I throw one very quick honourable mention in again before?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, move on. and this one's probably a little bit controversial because I suppose it's two single stars put together and it's a very short run, but I think Hangman Page and Kenny Omega, the work they've done in AEW since teaming up and being tag team champions, needs a mention, even though it has been a very short run in comparison to the likes of the Midnights, the Rock and Roll, and so on. The match with the Bucks and the match they had with FTR, I've seen so many people online refer to it as, or refer to those matches as the greatest tag matches of all time, especially the match they had with the Bucks. And if you've got, in such a short run, numerous people calling two of your matches the greatest of all time, however biased they may well be towards that particular company, I think that needs a little mention as well, because I mean, I've not seen a bad match with those guys in it. So
no, if they could have had the longevity, I think they could have easily been pushing for a place on the Mount Rushmore, because they, like I said, they work together so well. They've got great chemistry. So yeah, it's a very good honourable pick.
Yep, definitely. I mean, I talk about two people thrown together, and again, a bit of a short tenure. I was really considering Jericho and Benoit, because them as a tag team during 2001, I think it was. I thought they had just outstanding matches in that short time they were together.
Yeah, so there's been so many kind of like thrown together tag teams that have really, really worked well. I mean, you look at that, the Miz and Morrison thrown together, Jericho and the Big Show.
Jericho's been in a lot, hasn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, even like Kane and the Undertaker for that short spell in the invasion angle that we're going to be looking at. They were so dominant.
Yeah, I like Sheamus and Cesaro as well. I love the bar.
Yeah, the bar were really, really. I'm surprised I didn't actually even mention Booker T and Goldust.
Yes.
Because they were amazing.
It's your boy, Rance, a.k.a. Ray Cash from The Outsider's Edge. I'm here with my brother, Kyle, and we just want to shout out the Badlands Podcast. Check it out. The Mount Rushmore of podcasting. You have Darren, Mags, you have Paul Tolley. Check them out. Chair Shot Radio Network. Come out every week. Give them a listen.
Check them out. They're a great show, y'all. If you haven't heard them before, it's a lot of fun. It's an awesome show. We're big fans here at The Edge. And check out all the other shows here at The Chair Shot, where you
can always use your head. And if you don't like that, we don't give a
fuck. Thanks for listening.
But I've alluded to this this main topic, the invasion angle. Oh, universally derided as one of the biggest kind of missed opportunities in wrestling. I've always felt that whilst, it could have been so much more if WWE were able to get the big players to jump over, I still feel that there were quite a few wrestlers who really give it their all and came out of that angle looking better than they went in. So I thought we'd cover the stars of the invasion angle, kind of like put a little bit of a positive spin on it. So let's go to you, Simon, first. What's your first pick on your Mount Rushmore of the stars of the invasion angle?
The stars of the invasion angle. Okay. For me personally, I understand the invasion angle gets a lot of criticism because of what it could have been and so on. I actually didn't find it that bad. I think the criticism, as with a lot of things that you see online and in the wrestling community, I guess, with certain people, it's one extreme or the other, isn't it? It's either absolutely fantastic or it's absolute dog dirt. There's no middle ground. And I think that's not this. There's so many shades of grey in between black and white. It's not. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's dreadful. I didn't think it was brilliant. But there was a lot there to enjoy, as you said, Max. I actually was going to start with something slightly different. When you say about the stars of the invasion angle, I sort of looked at that as the most important players in the invasion angle and why it ended
however
up,
you want to look at it.
Why it ended up the way it did. And I'm actually was going to pump with my first choice being AOL Time Warner, being hugely important in that invasion angle, because those contracts did prevent so many names coming over. As good enjoyment as we had in the angle itself, I've got a little list here. Goldberg, Sting, Hogan, Hall, Nash, Flair, Mysterio, Scott Steiner. If you could just pick three or four of those, it would have been potentially more of what people wanted as opposed to what we got, regardless of how we viewed it when it arrived. I think the fact that AOL Time Warner had these contracts had such an influence on the invasion angle without even really being a part of the invasion angle, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so it's a totally different tack to the way I went and approached my picks. But yeah, you absolutely make a hell of a lot of sense. And I always think that the invasion angle gets a lot of grief. But one thing that's kind of always been overlooked, and it's something that's really always stuck with me, is that this was happening whilst the WWE were putting on their biggest show ever, and it ended up being one of the most popular shows that they've ever done in WrestleMania 7. And at the same time, Vince was still going through the transaction of signing all these wrestlers, buying up this company, and still building a storyline to it. I think he should be applauded for pulling off what he did.
And the XFL as well.
The XFL
was the same timeline as well, wasn't it? I mean, that's all WrestleMania 17... WCW contracts and all that, and the XFL. I mean, that's a lot going on for anyone or any company, regardless of size. You know, I just think that the influence of these bigger names, you know, you say that very much in quotes, air quotes, say bigger names of the likes of a Goldberg or a Sting, would they have made a big difference? I think they potentially could have. But then, you know, it's all, you know, looking back, hindsight booking, we'll never really know, will we? But I just think that the influence that AOL Time Warner had with those contracts and those guys not coming on board because of those contracts completely changed the direction of what fans had wanted for so many years previous.
Yeah.
I look at it, the whole angle, I think, does a bit poorly in retrospect. I think at the time when it was happening, it was really exciting for the whole of the year. The massive WCW stars weren't there, but actually what was happening was exciting, and there was a lot of twists and turns, and it was fun. And it's only when you look back and think, okay, the ending was a bit naff. It was very WWE centric, as it was always going to be, obviously. And like you said, the big stars didn't come across, but also then I think it did free up the likes of Goldberg to come in. They didn't have to come in and lose to the WWF. They could come in and just be the big star.
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah,
coming in. So I think it aided some people like Goldberg.
Yeah, I mean, as time went on, I suppose rather than getting everyone in one hit, you then got that Goldberg debut the night after. Was it WrestleMania 19, wasn't it?
Yeah,
and then, you know, Steiner coming in 2002 at Survivor Series. Flair coming in the night after the invasion angle actually finished, wasn't it, on that Monday Night Raw? All these additional pops going forward, all these additional moments going forward. I'm a huge fan of all of those debuts. They stand out as real memorable moments to me. I just think that if we're looking at the invasion angle individually, those names would have benefited that angle there as well as benefited later on, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and the WWE would have kind of blown all the wad in one kind of kind of storyline rather than it last for 3 to 4 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
So, Paul, after Simon's took the very unique slant of including the companies, I believe it's my turn to go first.
Sure is.
Now, I actually went in my picks. I went in I went in time order, the people who I thought got involved first. But the person who actually made it to the top of my list, he wasn't actually involved at the very beginning. I've gone with Paul Heyman. So the invasion was in its infancy. So on the 9th of July 2001, Kane was scheduled to face Mark Horseman, Lance Storm in a handicap match, and Jericho came out offering to be his partner, meaning it would be then a tag team match. And we get to the end, and Jericho has the Walls of Jericho applied on Lance Storm. But as Lance is about to tap, we get Rob Van Dam and Tommy Dreamer running through the audience, getting into the ring and start beating up Kane and Jericho. So as it was in the Invasion, the WWE locker room kind of emptied, and all these WWF wrestlers came flying out to come to the aid of their teammates. So we got the Dudleys, Taz, Just Incredible, Rhino, and Raven all piling to the ring. And after a brief standoff, these guys all turned on the WWE and started attacking Jericho and Kane as well. So Jim Ross is going mental on commentary. Paul Heyman is kind of sticking up for the WCW. And then he actually leaves the announcement table, starts high-fiving the wrestlers. And he announced that ECW had actually been brought into the Invasion. He talks about how he was tired of sitting next to that big fat pig, Jim Ross. and then he starts discussing the WCW had taken on the WWF and felt that everyone had forgotten about ECW, and then he announced that this Invasion would been taken to the extreme. So then later in that show, we see Shane and Vince discussing how they should team up to defeat this rising ECW threat. So Shane said that they should pick five of his WCW guys and five of Vince's WWF guys to take on the 10 ECW wrestlers. But in a typical swerve, Shane's WCW guys joined with ECW, sealing the deal with a hug, beating up the WWF guys. So Vince comes down and on the ramp, he's demanding an explanation. So that's when Shane claims responsibility for what had just happened, and that ECW and WCW were joining forces to form an alliance, and then they introduced the new owner of ECW, the billion-dollar princess, Stephanie McMahon. So under Stephanie, Paul was kind of relegated to being the mouthpiece and the general manager, and his job was kind of to entice the likes of the old ECW guard to join the company, like Spark Dudley and Perry Saturn. But he also was the guy who gave those kind of battle cries, those really heartfelt speeches to really pep up his team. So after we got to the Invasion pay-per-view and Steve Austin joined the alliance, this Heyman continued to be this cheerleader. And then we get to the November the 15th episode of SmackDown, and we're in the build-up to the blow-off, the Survivor Series match. And this is where Paul Heyman has his coup de grace. It's just absolutely brilliant. One of his best promos, one of the most passionate, heartfelt promos from someone who is an absolute master on the microphone. So he's hyping up the match for Survivor Series and talking about the stakes on both sides and what will happen to the WWF when ECW and WCW win. And then he starts really ripping into Vince, calls him out for losing his mind, being out of touch, trying to run a football league. This kind of prompts Vince to come down to the ring, and this is where Heyman turns that emotional dial up to 11. He explains to Vince why the Invasion happened, told him that he hated his guts, his children hates his guts. He called Vince a disgusting son of a bitch. Then he started to go on like a tour of Vince's history, of how he took Hogan's blood and built Titan Towers, how he stole Bret Hart's dream and bought himself an airplane with WWF all over it, how he stole Shawn Michaels' smile, took the company public and made himself a billionaire, how his father went to all the other promoters and swore he'd never compete with them and that his son would never compete with them. And as soon as his father died, he competed. And with his ruthless, take-no-prisoners attitude, he drove everybody else out of business. He stole people's ideas and he made himself $1 billion. And whose ideas did he steal the most? He stole Paul's. And Paul said, "I don't care about Jim Crockett. I care what you did to my family. Because whilst Doink the Clown was running around with green hair, Stone Cold was drinking his first beer in ECW. This promo culminated when Heyman starts slating Taz, saying that this guy used to be a killer, used to be a wrestler, and now is just a fat idiot commentator. And you could see Taz really getting wound up, Taz enters the ring, starts choking out Paul Heyman. So that leads to Survivor Series, and obviously we all know what happened there. WWF won. Paul Heyman would end up being fired after the Survivor Series match, and the alliance was crushed. But yeah, my first star of the alliance, I went with Paul E. Dangerously, Mr. Paul Heyman.
Decent pick. I mean, that promo was sensational. Just brutal kind of honesty and a bit uncomfortable to watch as well, which is which made it really cool. But I'm gonna veto.
Oh, get to fuck.
Oh, see, Heyman was on my list, so I'm really interested now in what you're going to come out with.
Okay. I think someone else from ECW made a much bigger name for themselves in the Invasion, and that was Rob Van Dam. Now, Rob Van Dam, you said it there, he originally came in jumping the barrier with Tommy Dreamer to kind of crash the Invasion party, and he was originally signed on a short-term contract. Mm-hmm. So one can only assume that he was going to be brought in for the Invasion alone, a part of it, and kind of play ECW's part, and that would be that. But what he did over those few months, the way he got over with the WWF crowd, just how exciting he was to watch. His matches with Jeff Hardy were incredible. And he ended up being one of only two invaders to be on the final Invasion team at Survivor Series.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that was in his plans when he first jumped that barrier. I think it was just an incredible way to just come in and make yourself. Obviously he had the cult following from ECW fans. I'd never watched ECW. I'd never heard of him. So I was one of the people he won over in that short period. And he just came in, and I think people were blown away by his style. He looked like a top star straight away. He was clearly the star of the ECW part of the Invasion. I think his offense was something WWE had never seen before. When you think of the Van Daminator and the Van Terminator, we'd never seen that in WWF. That kind of level of violence didn't exist. And even stuff like his style, he'd wear different kind of singlet every single show. Stuff like that didn't happen back then. And all of it just added up to make him more and more popular. He scored some really high profile victories over the course of the Invasion. He got himself into a pay-per-view main event world title match against Stone Cold and Kurt Angle. And like I said, he in that short space of time, he went from an also-ran to being on that final 5v5 team. And from there, once the Invasion was over, he got on to have a really successful career, winning a WWE championship, winning, I think, four Intercontinental championships. So in terms of someone who came in and exceeded, I think, what even Vince thought he was going to get out of it, Rob Van Dam is makes him one of the stars of the Invasion for me.
That's bollocks. that took me ages to write, Paul, and you just shit on it straight away. I'm not happy at that.
That's one of the reasons I love this, when I've listened to the show before and so on. We've had yourself, Mags, give this long, detailed explanation as to why Paul Heyman was fantastic.
I was tearing up reading it.
And I'm not going to lie, like I said, Heyman's on my list as well for a lot of the reasons you put forward, but yours was far more detailed description and a timeline of events, and absolutely superb. Brought back so many memories. After that long, descriptive narrative about how great Heyman was, we just get, nope. And then Paul puts forward his veto. Rob Van Dam puts forward his long description as to why Van Dam. And I'm thinking, oh, Van Dam, I don't understand that. But at the end of it, he's kind of won me over. I think Van Dam's a great choice. We just get, that's bollocks. Yeah.
He's good at that. I mean, right at the beginning of this show, it was innocent. Mr. Tollier was very, very innocent. And And now he's just become this devious underhanded vetoer. I don't know this person anymore. Who are you?
I thought ECW were kind of a minimal part of that invasion. I think only one ECW guy can go up there, and for me that's Rob Van Dam. He's also, I didn't mention it there, I'm pretty sure he was the first invader to win a WWF title as well when he won the hardcore title.
Yeah.
I don't believe he was the only one from
ECW. No, the first.
No, I mean, I don't believe he was the only big name from ECW who was involved, but I can't do anything about it. You've vetoed. Really upset me there. So, Simon, make me smile with your second pick.
My second pick? What, you wanted me to put Paul Heyman forward as well?
In fact, you know, that would be glorious because that would be shitting right until his veto.
Well, Heyman was my second choice, yes. And I think I'm going to have to stick with that. A lot of the reasons you explained yourself. So many memorable moments, a mouthpiece for certain guys who potentially in the Alliance needed it. You had a lot of guys there who, simply because of the nature of the players in the Alliance, in the ECW, WCW Alliance team, may not have been in high-profile spots before. So you had the mouthpiece of, well, Shane and Steph, obviously, but Heyman was very, very vocal putting these guys over. His work on commentary was absolutely incredible. WrestleMania 17, he was fantastic on commentary. So it's just before the invasion started. But even then, he's talking about the WCW guys who are up in the skybox. The commentary on the Survivor Series event and the main event, and his argument back and forth with Jim Ross. I'm a huge Jim Ross fan. To me, Jim Ross, I've grown up with Jim Ross from the days of watching WCW when I was very little, right through the WWF and so on. Even now with AEW and my kids, sat there with my youngest, who's only 10, still hearing Jim Ross. But hear him that fired up and arguing with Heyman, purely because of how good Heyman was at winding him up and getting that reaction out of him, I think it's a great testament to how, again, I'm a huge Jim Ross fan, but a great testament to how great Heyman was at getting that reaction and his performances on commentary. So I've got to go with Heyman myself, because I just think the guy was fantastic. And that promo you mentioned as well, Max, just absolute gold. I watched it back not long ago, and it's just absolutely superb. And to be honest, he says a lot of the things that I think a lot of casual fans, well, not casual fans, a lot of, you know, maybe more hardcore fans were actually thinking themselves.
Yeah, and you can tell in the promo that there is an air of truth to it. I mean, I know obviously 99.99% of wrestling is a work, but you can tell there's just those little grains of truth about Vince kind of taking ACW ideas and making money off them, and yet Paul struggled to pay his wrestlers and stuff like that. So you can see there had to be some real resentment there.
His performance as well on the, I mean, the invasion obviously ended with the Survivor Series 2001 pay-per-view, which, quick little plug, we're actually covering on the SJP Wrestling Podcast very, very soon to coincide with this year's Survivor Series, so look out for that. But the Raw after that night, the Monday Night Raw after the Survivor Series, Heyman's performance there, even though it was not on the screen for long, is also superb. When they bring back Jerry the King Lawler to go into commentary, Vince McMahon gives him a dressing down, tells him he's fired and so on. His facial reactions, the emotions he portrays in the ring there. Again, the guy is so, he's just, we see it now with Heyman, sorry, you see it now with Reigns, you see it now when he was working with Lesnar. The guy is just absolute gold, isn't he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's a perfect pick, and it's quite rightly goes on your Mount Rushmore, Simon.
You would say it was a perfect pick, of course you would.
It was a great pick.
Paul, what pick am I vetoing out of sheer spite?
You can't veto this one, surely. It's,
you couldn't veto Paul Heyman, but you did. So let's roll with the punches.
I'm gonna go for Booker T.
Oh, you motherfucker. He's one of mine as well.
He's on my list too.
I think he was probably one of, if again, the only WCW star to come in and just look immediately, look like a star, look $1 million. When he came in at King of the Ring, crashed that Austin Jericho Benoit match, triple threat match, and attacked Austin. He just looked great, and I think he came into it with the most to lose because he was the WCW champion at the time of closure. So there was a lot of pressure on his shoulders as kind of the marquee star who did have his contract taken over. And yeah, he had a tricky start. I mean, he had a tricky run through it all because I don't think he won a pay-per-view match. I think he was essentially a jobber to WWF stars for the whole thing. But still, he always seemed like a threat against The Rock, against The Undertaker. He always felt he could have won, and he held his own there and kind of made his name in WWF. He survived that awful WCW takeover atrocity that happened at the end of one of the Raws that the crowd just universally shat on. Again, that could have dented his confidence. It could have dented Vince's confidence in him, and that could have been the end of Booker T. But he didn't. He carried on. He bounced back. He was over with the crowd. I think at SummerSlam, when he took on The Rock, defended his WCW championship, I think that was the only dream match we got of the whole invasion angle. I don't think any other kind of dream match other than the WF versus WCW in its kind of in the idea of it was a dream match, I guess. But I think that the only one-on-one dream match that happened was Booker T and The Rock, and they made history as well. It's the first and only time two black wrestlers have headlined a WWF pay-per-view, which is crazy. That's not happened since, but it happened there.
That's like nearly 20 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. That's but crazy. WWF didn't make a big deal of it at the time. Like now, you see it with the women. They make a massive deal of any bit of history they can make.
Well, no, you wouldn't be able to get away from it.
No, you wouldn't.
But hashtags everywhere.
Yeah, but yeah. Then they were both there on merit. It was a massive dream match. Booker T versus The Rock, and it was a great match as well. And I think, like I said, he was one of the only invaders who came in to look like a star. I think he's one of the only ones of the original invaders to go on and have a really successful career in WWE after that. And we saw after the invasion was over, he kind of played a massive part straight away in crowning Chris Jericho the Undisputed Champion. So he was straight in there, a massive feud with Stone Cold Steve Austin, and then went on to perform one of the all-time great comedy wrestling skits, whatever you want to call it, in the Supermarket Brawl, which is still probably one of my most watched WWF videos on YouTube. I get it up every few months, I'm sure. So Booker T for me, he came in, looked like a star, he acted like a star, and he was WCW's star throughout.
Yeah, I saw one of veto him, but he's one of my picks, and yeah, you're absolutely right. He was the biggest star that came in, obviously being a multi-time world champion in WCW, and arguably he had a better career, or he had a more successful career in WWE than he had in WCW. So yeah, I can't take out the five-time. WCW champion. So yeah, you survived this pick.
I'm gonna make it hard for you. I'm gonna make it hard for you, the veto.
And you've done it. I don't know how you had the brass neck to veto Paul Heyman and then come with Booker T for a pick. It's just shocking. Shocking.
So I've gone for the two that made it to the end. They were the two invaders who were on that WCW side at the end at Survivor Series. Mm.
Great picks. Simon, let's go to you, sir, for your third pick.
Yeah, sure. Kind of ties in with Booker T a little bit there, some of the points you've made. He was on the Survivor Series team at the end, but not one of the originals. He was the other side of that Supermarket Brawl. And that's Stone Cold Steve Austin is my next pick. I think that he was... To me, during this time, there was a lot of backstage skits, a lot of interviews, a lot of promos, a lot of people being on screen together. You mentioned Booker T, how much of a star he became. He was associated so strongly with Shane McMahon as well. It's just the amount of screen time to certain individuals, I think, is very relevant as to what we viewed as important in that era. And Steve Austin was all over every program all the time. And rightfully so. He was the number one guy in the business. Again, we come back to the stars not... The big stars not coming over with the rest of the WCW contingent in the invasion. They needed star power to make it more of a threat. Austin was one of those that they decided to lump in with that. I'm not 100% sure I agree with that decision, but that's what we got. And Austin, I think, as talented as the guy is, obviously, he did a great job working as a heel in that scenario. He went through a bit of a paranoid stage. There's a pay-per-view, I can't remember which pay-per-view it was, it might be an Unforgiven, where the poster is three images of his head, and he's going through quite a sketchy, paranoid time. He started wearing white knee braces. For some reason, that sticks out in my mind.
Yeah, that was a great poster. And then the stage, the screen on the stage was like a hologram of those faces changing. It was brilliant.
Yeah, exactly. And he had this sort of nervy, paranoid, but yet still dangerous edge to him, whilst effectively everyone was looking to him for leadership because he was this big star off screen, but also storyline wise as well. The fact that Shane and Stephanie viewed him as their absolute diamond in their company, despite the fact he was very much WWF or WWE for a huge period of time. And again, then we come back to the big make or break for me when it comes to talking about actual wrestlers, and that's the in-ring content. And whereas, okay, he may have slowed down a touch by 2001, he had his neck problems, he'd had knee problems, like both knees apparently, he may have lost a step here and there, he was still one of the best around, to the intensity he brought, especially with his brawling style with certain aspects. I think the matches he had with Kurt Angle, where he dropped the belt to him in Angle's hometown and then won it back on, I think it was an episode of Raw a few weeks later, potentially, was superb. His role in the initial invasion pay-per-view was hugely important in setting the scene, and then his role, will he turn, is he jumping back to the WWF at the Survivor Series pay-per-view, kind of bookended the whole storyline. And if you're talking about Austin going in and you're talking about Austin coming out, to me he's obviously been a hugely important player in that whole theme.
Yep, I can't disagree with anything you said, and I remember vividly back then absolutely hating this version of Steve Austin, because Steve Austin was my guy, and him like switching over to the enemy of the Alliance, I couldn't stand him, and he drew the reaction from me that he wanted. He worked that kind of character arc perfectly, so yeah, it's a great pick.
Yeah, he definitely went on a journey during those invasion months. It was great to watch. Was it during the invasion he whipped someone in the ring, or was that another time?
It was just after the invasion that he was whipping Vince McMahon when McMahon was doing the Kiss My Ass Club.
I'm not sure. I got vague memories of him whipping like a WCW guy because they weren't up to scratch.
Oh yes, no, that does sound right. I can't remember who that was.
Was it not Canyon?
Might have been.
I remember him having like a set to with Chris Canyon when Canyon claimed to be the Invasion MVP, and then Austin really took offense to that. So it could have been that, but I do remember the whipping. I just can't.
Yeah, that does ring a bell.
I can't 100% say who it was, but yeah.
I just remember being really uncomfortable to watch, but again, in all the right ways, it was really actually quite an emotive bit. And I think I remember JR's commentary. He was just so disappointed in what Austin had become. I need to go find that and rewatch it and see if it lives up to my made up memory of it.
Oh, I'm gonna have to go look for it as well now, because that does ring a bell, but I can't quite place where from. I can remember him. I believe it was Austin being involved in the whipping of McMahon with the Kiss My Ass Club and so on. I might be wrong
it's
with that
Taz.
As well.
But... Whips Taz.
Whips Taz.
Taz, was it?
Ah, okay.
Yeah, it was during the invasion angle. He said it was bad enough what they did to Taz. This is off a fan board, but he says it's bad enough that he whipped Taz, but they also made Raven into a coward in the run-up. So, yeah, it's Taz. That'll be a fun to go and watch back, especially with how Taz has become kind of sour against the WWF now. Mm. He probably deserves a whipping a little bit. No, but it's a great pick, Simon, and it actually leads really well into my second pick, because whilst we had this invasion angle, obviously, and that was the main story, Steve had his own little storyline going on as well, and it's with my second pick. So following his debut year, record-breaking debut year, Kurt Angle went into this invasion storyline, having just lost his first WWF title to The Rock at No Way Out. And then he had the submission match at WrestleMania and then at Judgment Day. But as we get into the beginning of the invasion angle, Kurt started to turn face as he teamed up with Steve Austin to beat off these invaders from WCW and ECW. He'd be part of the group that beat up Booker T and Buff Bagwell during their match before the pay-per-view. And then at Invasion, he and Austin captained the team of five, where they went up against five hand-picked members of the Alliance. Now, obviously, we all know that the Alliance won when Austin turned his back on WWF and joined ECW and WCW. And at the close of that match, Austin nails Angle with a Stone Cold Stunner, which meant he got pinned by Booker T. So then on the next night on Raw, Austin said one of the reasons that he defected to the Alliance was because he felt that Vince was grooming Kurt Angle to take Austin's spot as the face of the company and as the WWF champion. So then we get to the August the 20th episode of Raw when Kurt interrupted Austin Appreciation Night when the Alliance was celebrating Austin being a part of their group, and he made a little call back to a certain stunt that Austin pulled in March 1999 when he soaked the Alliance in milk from a milk truck. Kurt then challenged Booker T for a WCW heavyweight title match on the 26th of July of SmackDown, which Booker T accepted. And then this kind of gave the WWF some momentum when Kurt Angle won that title by making Booker T submit to the ankle lock, which meant that they took that WCW title away from the Alliance. It was a pretty short-lived title because Booker won it back 4 days later on Raw. Then we get Angle taking on Austin at SummerSlam for the WWF title. But even though he won the match, he failed to take the belt because he won by disqualification. The feud with Austin continued pretty much all the way through the rest of the Alliance storyline. We got a point where Steve stole Kurt Angle's gold medals, tied him to a cinder block and threw him in the river. But Kurt would get his revenge pretty much soon after when he kidnapped Austin, took him to that very same river, blindfolded him, and said if he didn't give Kurt a title shot, he was going to throw him into the water. So Austin, who then obviously, as Simon mentioned, was playing a very paranoid kind of cowardly character, he was crying, was in fear for his life. He agreed to have that title match at Unforgiven, but Kurt threw him in the water anyway. But luckily for Steve Austin, it was only into a kid's blow-up paddling pool. So we get to Unforgiven, and as you said, the whole theme of the show was about Stone Cold's paranoia, and it would lead to his undoing, meaning that Angle would take that title from Austin, and meant that the WWF had both the big titles in their grasp, the WWF title and the WCW World title. Again, he wouldn't have that title for very long, and he lost it back to Austin. But he got a little bit of a run with the WCW US title. But after that, he defected. He joined Steve Austin in the Alliance. And during a WrestleMania 17 rematch between Shane McMahon and Vince, he came out to look like he was going to help Vince, but instead he hit the members of the team WWF with a steel chair and said that he wanted to defect because he wanted to be on the winning side with other winners, just like Stone Cold Steve Austin. So this leads us to the Survivor Series match, and Kurt Angle was eliminated pretty early on when he tapped out to the sharpshooter applied by The Rock. But that wasn't the end of his impact in that match, because he would run down as the match reached its apex, and he would come back to the WWF fold when he struck Austin with the title belt, helping The Rock win the match, and meant that the WWF was victorious. They'd beaten off the alliance. And Kurt Angle proclaimed himself as the man that had saved the WWF. So, yeah, my second pick is the Olympic hero, Kurt Angle.
Great choice. He's one of my short list. I'd completely forgotten about the milk truck.
Really? Wow.
And I'd particularly forgotten that it happened during the invasion. Yeah. My only thing about Kurt Angle was the flip flopping at the end. I wasn't too keen on, but yeah, he was one of the undoubted stars of the invasion, without doubt.
Yeah, I felt that if anyone in the WWF kind of grew out of this angle, I thought it was Kurt Angle. From that, I mean, obviously he was well on the path to being a big star with being a former WWF champion, but he really took this storyline and kind of really grew with it and came out of the other side a much bigger star than he went in, I thought.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so, good choice. I wouldn't have vetoed that.
Oh, but Paul Heyman got to go.
Yeah, for Rob Van Dam.
Simon, let's round your Mount Rushmore off, sir.
Okay, for my last pick, it's basically between one or two. And neither are actual in-ring performers, I guess. It was a straight choice for me between Vince McMahon or Shane McMahon. I've decided to go with Shane because he wrestled in the main event in Survivor Series at the end. And I think he kind of kick-started the whole storyline when, the name on the contract says McMahon, on the dual broadcast between Raw and Nitro. He came in as the owner of WCW. He was always around Booker T, who was his WCW champion, in the main events against The Rock. And then I believe he wrestled in a handicap match against The Rock with Booker T.
Yeah.
And again, it comes down to screen time and it comes down to involvement, because we are looking at an angle. We are looking at a story. We are looking at how it played out in front of us. And whereas in-ring work for me is the most important personally when it comes to wrestling, when we're looking at a story arc, I think his involvement as a character in that story is huge. So for me, my final pick, and only just edging out his dad because he was more involved in the actual wrestling side, I go with Shane McMahon.
It's an absolutely stellar pick. I remember watching that that simulcast of Raw and Nitro, and then seeing Shane turn up on Nitro. It was like it blew the wrestling world apart. It was just such a massive, massive thing. And I think Shane's character work all the way throughout this whole invasion angle, it made it more than it actually could have been. So yeah, I agree with that pick. It's a great, great pick.
Yeah, definitely. And I think if you think of the invasion, you think of that moment first. I think that simulcast,
yeah,
with Shane with the contract. That's the first image that comes into my head.
Yep.
And you said when he was with Booker T. I watched that SummerSlam match yesterday. The Booker T versus The Rock, where Shane was seconding Booker T.
Yep.
And the clothesline from hell he takes from Bradshaw is just amazing. Classic Shane McMahon just putting his body on the line.
I know.
Folds him up.
Ultimate Vince love him. He's literally killed himself for the last 30 years to make Vince love him, and he still prefers Triple H over him.
Dad, look at me.
Yeah, pretty much. Look what I'll do. Kill myself here.
Fall off this big screen.
Sorry, son, I was in Gorilla. No, it's a great final picker. Now, Paul, what am I actually going to veto?
I'm going to make it really hard for you now.
Go on.
I'm going for your favourite. Chris Jericho.
Oh, right. One word.
Reason I'm going for Jericho is similar to your reason for Kurt Angle, actually. Just to twist that screw a bit further. In how he, the difference between how he went into the Invasion angle and how he came out. I think when he went into the Invasion storyline, albeit he had won kind of that unofficial title against Triple H on Raw, that one time, that the unofficial world title that Earl Hebner was forced to reverse, and at the King of the Ring where Booker T invaded, he was in the world title match there. But I think at that point, Jericho was still very much seen as like an intercontinental title level talent. And by the end of Invasion, you know, almost immediately after it ended, he'd become the first ever undisputed world champion. And I think that's testament to kind of how big a part he played in the Invasion, but it was quite an understated part. We had, you know, you had people flip-flopping around. You had Kurt Angle, Austin flipping from side to side. Jericho was always the one that it was always a question mark over for that whole period. He had a question mark over his head and he didn't know where he was going to turn. He was the one who had the most reason to join WCW because he'd made his name there. All his friends were in WCW. He had this weird kind of sexual chemistry with Stephanie McMahon where they've kind of, you bullied her, but they were flirting kind of thing. You could easily see him joining forces with Stephanie McMahon. And of course he hated The Rock. And as the Invasion storyline went along, it was that drive, that hatred for The Rock and the jealousy of The Rock that just built and built and built until ultimately at Survivor Series, he tried to cost WWF right at the last. After being eliminated, he attacked The Rock and attempted to. I don't even think he wanted WCW to win. I think he just didn't want The Rock to win. And that obviously set in stone. That set in motion that his place I've forgotten the name of the pay-per-view, Vengeance.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
When he won the title.
Yep.
Obviously set in place his place in that tournament, probably aligned him with Booker T, who came in and helped him win the title at Vengeance. He won the WCW Championship during the Invasion storyline. So he actually beat The Rock for the WCW Championship. While again, at that time, they were both technically allies in WWF. So I thought, for his journey from kind of intercontinental standard to world title standard, for, like I said, the kind of nuanced storyline he had running through the whole thing, will he turn, won't he turn? I think that was really fun to watch. I was a big Jericho fan at the time, as I know obviously you were, and it was great to see him kind of come out of it and become the undisputed champion.
It's just a great pick. It was during this time when he had one of the funniest promos with him and The Rock giving Booker, Rhino, Shane and Steph the grief in the ring when we had a school time with Booker when it said, what's 2 + 2, Booker? Thomas Jefferson, sucker. all that promo. And we all know how much I love Chris Jericho. But he's made some idiotic moves recently.
That's irrelevant.
Giving money to Donald Trump, saying he's not political on Twitter when he's clearly very political, infecting 250,000 people at Sturgis. So, yeah, I'm going to have to veto that pick, Paul, just because of what's happened in 2020.
Yeah, just because I vetoed Paul Heyman. Tell the truth.
That is because you fucking vetoed Paul E. Dangerously. Absolutely is. And where you put forward somebody who whilst they are I'm not happy with the veto. I can see the point. You're not going to like my veto. So if I could just be serious for a minute. So when the WWF purchased WCW, which was in the run-up to WrestleMania, the idea was actually meant to be that WCW was its own entity, that it was going to be its own kind of a standalone show. But unfortunately, the WWF weren't able to secure that TV deal. And then with a huge number of those wrestlers' contracts being bought out, the WWF had to make use of the talent. So this is what the whole idea behind this invasion angle was, that WWE used the talent that they'd suddenly acquired. So we actually started the invasion angle with my pick, and it was Lance Storm. He interrupted a match between Perry Saturn and Steve Blackman on the 28th of May. He super kicked Perry, which meant that Steve Blackman could win the match, and he started off the whole running through the audience that WCW and ECW came known for. And he was actually he was in the second ever interpromotional match of the Invasion storyline when he and Mike Awesome faced Kane and Jericho on the July the 9th episode of Raw that I mentioned earlier. At the Invasion pay-per-view, Lance Storm and Mike Awesome lost to Edge and Christian, but then the day after on Raw, Lance picked up the WWF Intercontinental title from Albert, a title that he would eventually lose to Edge a month later at SummerSlam. He'd then go and tag with the Hurricane and feuded with the Hardy Boys over the dual WWF and WCW tag team titles for the next few months. And then at that infamous Unforgiven pay-per-view, Storm and the Hurricane competed in a fatal four-way match for those WWF tag team titles, but failed to win. And then they failed to win in the match at No Mercy against the Hardy Boys for the WCW titles. Then we get to Rebellion when Lance Storm and Justin Incredible took on Billy and Chuck. Then we get to the Survivor Series where he wasn't involved in the main match. He was actually involved in an immunity battle royal where the winner was immune from being fired for a full year. He didn't win. It was actually won by Test. And then when the Team Alliance lost in the main event, Storm was kayfabe fired, along with the rest of his Alliance teammates. But he actually got his job back on the December 17th episode of Raw when he defeated The Rock in a match for his contract when a Test helped him pick up the victory. So, yeah, I'm going to go with Lance Storm to veto your pick, Paul.
That's shocking. That's much worse than the veto I did.
Good.
Basically, you said, I'm going to put Lance Storm in, and then you proceeded to tell us a number of ways in which he lost over the over the next few months.
But he came out a winner because he won a contract.
He did. And I'd like to correct myself when I said Booker T and The Rock was the only dream match to happen, because obviously that Lance Storm and Kidman versus Billy and Chuck or whatever it was obviously dream match material.
That's what people have been waiting for years.
Yeah.
I don't care. You vetoed Paul Heyman. You reap what you sow.
You show yourself up. As soon as you get vetoed, you show yourself up. You know that.
Yeah. Well, I'm a very testy, short-tempered person. And yeah, I'm also... You bring it out of me, Paul, unfortunately. Yeah.
You're like Chris Jericho at the end of the Invasion.
Yeah, pretty much. Except I don't donate money to Donald Trump.
No, I've got a theory on that. I think he's being a heel.
Well, clearly.
No, I genuinely do. Chris Jericho was always like really invested in being a heel, like to the point of like he'd never sell merchandise if he was a heel because he doesn't believe that should be a thing. I think him chucking a few hundred quid to Donald Trump and making it public, is it doesn't cost him much at all, and the wrestling crowd hate him.
Yeah,
I don't think, because he wouldn't like being cheered in AEW. If he in Jericho's mind, if he's a heel, he wants to be booed. And the only way to get the modern wrestling crowd to boo you really is to be an arsehole and get cancelled.
You not see maybe the start of a face turn for him in AEW though.
Yeah, potentially.
I mean, if everyone's singing your theme tune like that, he must be just thinking, oh, a few more quid merch, a few more quid record sales. Got MJF there who he can work with as well. I mean, Jericho is very, very clever in that anyone who's hot since AEW started, he's worked with. Mm-hmm. And now at the moment, everyone's going on about how great MJF is. All of a sudden, he's working with MJF. Are we going to see like a battle for who's going to be in charge of the Inner Circle, or perhaps the Inner Circle will turn on him and Jericho kick him out, saying you've made us a laughing stock with dance routines and whatnot. I don't know. This is just sort of off the top of my head, but it wouldn't surprise me if he's their biggest star, isn't he? Let's be honest. He's their number one guy, regardless of who currently has the belt. Would it work with a 50-year-old Chris Jericho as the babyface, almost their Hogan, I suppose, chasing a heel champion, an MJF or something like that? Or I don't know, I'm just sort of, it's off the top of my head, but maybe this is the way he's going at the moment. But I see what you mean about being a heel and paying the money to Trump to get a reaction that way. He's all invested, isn't he? He's very, very intelligent man.
Yeah,
and I think the $3,000 that or whatever he donated, that isn't scratching the surface for him, so it would absolutely make sense. But what would it make even more sense if AEW sacked off Chris Jericho and replaced him with Lance Storm? That'd be absolutely perfect. Just like us. See, I'm a trailblazer. I'm giving AEW these free ideas. Get rid of Chris Jericho and pick Lance Storm. He's the money guy.
I want an Inner Circle t-shirt now with Lance Storm's face on the front.
Yeah. The Un-Americans, again.
Oh, yeah, the Un-Americans, yeah.
I give credit where credit's due. I said Rob Van Dam was the first invader to take a title, but Lance Storm was the first and probably only invader to take a proper title. Because a hardcore title ain't a proper title, is it? Like, the Intercontinental's a big deal.
Challenge for a hardcore title and see if... See if it's a proper title.
Who's the current hardcore champion? I take him on, no problem.
Oh, well, this has been a brilliant episode, even with technology trying to ruin it for us.
That's why I didn't, mate. Drives me mad.
Well, Simon, let us know what kind of topic you would like for a Mount Rushmore in the future. What kind of topic would you like to hear someone debate a Mount Rushmore with us on?
Hey, what? Ooh, that's a tricky one. We could maybe sort of carry on that theme and look at a Mount Rushmore of Lance Storm matches.
I like that.
Or potentially, how about a Mount Rushmore of babyface promos? Because everyone always rants on about the heels and so on, don't they? And how intense they can be. How about babyface promos?
I love that. Yeah,
that is a good one.
That's going to be tricky. That's going to be a hard one.
Yeah. Can't think of four Lance Storm matches. No, but Simon, you've been absolutely amazing. Let all the Badlands listeners know where they can find you on social media, where they can find your amazing podcast.
Yeah. No, excellent. Thank you very much for having me on. And thanks for... rearranging the time from yesterday because of my work commitments. I hugely appreciate that, boys. You can find me on Twitter and at SJP Words, but you can find the show, the SJP Wrestling Podcast. We've just started an Instagram, but if you contact me on there, please bear with me. I'm very dependent upon my daughter helping me with that. That's her domain. I'm much more active on Facebook or Twitter, and again, you can just find us at SJP Wrestling Pod. Please track us down, check us a like, give us a listen, and hopefully you'll like what you hear.
Yeah, I can't see any reason why you wouldn't, because it's an amazing podcast. I've had the honour of being on it more than once, and yeah, I'd happily go on it again and again, because yeah, it's just a great time being involved and it's a great listen. So yeah, everyone go and check it out.
I really appreciate that, mate. Thank you.
All right, should I give him the six commandments?
Go for it, Paul.
Yeah.
See if you can nail it.
I'll nail it. Head over onto Twitter. Follow us. Follow me and Magsy first at Dej Kirkby. I'm sure you follow him already. And me at Rain Counter. Hit us up. Let us know kind of what were your favorite moments of the invasion? Who are your stars of the invasion? And what are your memories of the invasion? Did you enjoy it, or do you think it was anticlimactic? Let us know. Give us a follow, and we'll follow back. Then after that, head over to your podcast provider and click the subscribe button on Visionaries Global Media, Shoot in the Sports-ish, Five Nerds Go, and the Cheer Shop Media Group. Subscribe to those podcast networks, give them 5 stars or give them whatever rating you want, preferably 5 stars, but it's up to you. And you'll get all sorts of cool podcasts with Magsy's voice on, my voice on. And I've just been thrown off because Mel's just walked in through the door to throw me off my outro. I was on a...
She's doing the Lance Storm running.
You paid her for that one. Where was I? And head over to thechairshot.com for all your hard-hitting pro wrestling news and opinion. As always, stay safe and always use your head.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.